I am Daniel McGees, and welcome to Movie 101 Review. Movie 101 is all about the movies that I like for the last 40 years. And today, I have my special guest. He's the author of several books, no other than Miss Safa Bernal.
Hello, everybody. How are you doing today? I hope you're having a fantastic week, a fantastic time, and you're going to have a fantastic listen of this fantastic podcast. Apparently, that's the word of the day. I'll try not to use it again. I am Safa Bernal. I am a cyberpunk and mythpunk author. I am somebody who also previously worked in the film industry as a script doctor and also as a member of production staff. So we're here to talk about film today, and it's really exciting.
Yes, people, Miss Safa Bernal is my regular guest on Book 101 Review. We have this segment called Safa Sunday.
It's a great segment.
Yes, it's a great segment. We talk about...
I think there are tons of reasons why a movie's premiere might be postponed. And if it's for the right reasons, then I'm all for it. You know, I think, too, the original time slot was a little cluttered with other movies and things like that. And so being able to put Dune kind of on its own was a very good idea. I think also premiering it in 2024 instead of 2023 was potentially a very smart move when it comes to award shows. Because 2023 was a huge year for awards. You know, we had Barbenheimer, we had, you know, the Barbie movie, we had Oppenheimer, we had Killers of the Flower Moon, we had Pretty Things. You know, we've had all of these amazing movies that, you know, did incredibly well in certain award shows and different things like that. The year was packed. You know, there were tons of loud voices. Oppenheimer hit like the bomb. I apologize for that joke. But it really did. It hit with an explosive force. And let's be honest here. The first part of Dune, you know, Dune Part 1, it was nominated for 10 Oscars and won 6 of them. So clearly, they want something similar for Dune 2. Something I think they should go for, because this is the kind of science fiction movie. It's the kind of movie that deserves to be lauded for everything that it does. You know, the art direction, you know, Andrew Auckland Snow and Frédéric Bertillon Gabineau, they, you know, led the art direction. They did an incredible job. Hans Zimmer did some of the best music I've heard from him since Gladiator. You know, it's just the cinematography. You know, Greg Fraser did the cinematography for Zero Dark Thirty, for The Batman. He also did it for Rogue One and for the for part one of Dune, as we continued forward with part two here. You know, I remember that was the thing that I loved about Rogue One. The cinematography was just so pure and so amazingly visceral that it made you emotionally attached to the scene. And Dune 2 is very much like that. It's a visceral entity. It's a visceral thing. And so all of these incredible creators have come together in this conflagration of something quite beloved in the science fiction sphere. Like, you know, when you talk about, you know, Frank Herbert and the novels and what they did for science fiction, that's a completely other conversation that we could have, you know, on Book 101 Review. Make sure hit us up in the comments.
Things that under the sun. So Ms. Bernal, let's talk about this sensational movie today.
Oh, it's threatening me with a good time. So Dune 2. Okay, Dune Part 2. Denis Villeneuve, a French-Canadian director born in Trois-Rivières in Quebec, which incidentally, I actually know Trois-Rivières quite well because my father's family emigrated from Europe and ended up in Trois-Rivières. So it's like, okay, yeah, you know, there's some kind of homeschool pride, you know, going on to see Denis Villeneuve. If you've seen other ones of his movies, you've seen things like Blade Runner 2049. You've seen Prisoners. You've seen maybe Arrival. These are all movies that have been done by Denis Villeneuve. And for me, I love Blade Runner 2049. So when I heard that he was doing Dune, I was just kind of like, yeah, where do I sign? Yeah, this is going to be great. It's going to be exactly what it needs to be. It is going to be science fiction meets art house. It's going to take its time. It's not going to be one of those, you know, kind of one and done 90 minute sci-fi movies, which are a lot of fun. You know, there are movies out there which are just pure entertainment. They're just a lot of fun. And then there are movies that are very much more firm expressions of art. They take their time. The cinematography is flawless. You know, you've got this incredible mood and this incredible majesty to it. And not to say that other directors can't do that too. There's amazing directors out there that do that every day, you know. But Dune was something very special, both part one and part two. Now, part two is still out in some theaters right now. So if you want to, please go see it. If you have not seen part one, and you're like, oh man, I gotta know, do I have to go see part one? It helps. It helps to see part one. But you don't have to if you've read the book. Or there are ways you can catch yourself up on that. Like, I would say, go see part one. You know, it's on certain streaming services. Watch part one and then immediately go see part two. It's an incredible event. You know, I think of the film events over the decades where these are films which are going to be remembered. These are films which are going to live in people's minds. I think of The Lord of the Rings, you know, especially the extended editions by, you know, Peter Jackson and all those guys, and how that experience of The Lord of the Rings trilogy really helped form cinema in New Zealand and, you know, just the kind of cultural zeitgeist maker that it became, and how even though it's 20 years later, we can still watch those movies and just be shocked at how amazingly good they are. You know, I have one friend who was just like, yeah, I couldn't get into it. I was like, what? And he was just like, it's just so slow. I was like, okay, maybe don't watch Dune. If you can watch The Lord of the Rings, you know, and things like that, then this is definitely your film.
Yes.
Oh, I'm so excited.
So, Ms. Vernon, I heard the opening of Dune Part 2 was postponed many times. Do you think this is good indication that this movie is a box office hit because of that? So, Ms. Bernard, what impact do events of Dune 2 have on the broader universe Frank Herbert created?
So, for those of you who are maybe potentially unfamiliar with Dune and for what Dune is, basically you've got an interstellar kind of galactic empire of multiple different planets taken care of by multiple different houses. You've got a hierarchy, a heavily hierarchical culture. You've got an upper class of elites who are dukes and barons and, you know, the whole thing. And the emperor at the top, played by Christopher Walken, which I found particularly fun. Especially if you remember that, what was it, the Fatboy Slim song, you know, back in the day where Christopher Walken was tap dancing the whole time. And the lyrics were, if you walk without rhythm, you won't attract the worm. And that's from Dune. That song. True. Literally from Dune. So all of a sudden, Christopher Walken being the emperor, I'm like, I love it. But true. So you've got this incredible empire of spacefaring peoples. And they have this sort of religious, you know, matrilineal line called the Bene Gesserit. And they control basically the births of the nobility and everything like that. They control bloodlines and, you know, who gets pregnant and all these different things. And the Bene Gesserit have been doing this for thousands of years in order to basically bring forth the perfect person, you know, the Kwisatz Haderach. You know, they're doing this in order to control the universe, but also to bring forth this kind of figure. And all women in the Bene Gesserit, including the Lady Jessica, who is the mother of Paul Atreides being the main character of Dune. And so you've got these systems of control. You also have the navigators, and the navigators travel through the space lanes and through space by using spice. Mm. And spice is a drug from Arrakis, otherwise known as the planet Dune. And they don't necessarily know where the spice comes from. La la la. Well, we do know because it's the Fremen, you know, the Fremen.
Yes.
But the spice is so important. It's this sort of psychedelic, hallucinogenic, almost spiritual drug. And the Fremen, who are the natural born citizens of Arrakis, they have been living with spice for thousands of years. You know, they remember when there was water, but now because of spice production and everything else, Dune is a complete, just 100% desert. And so the Fremen want freedom. And so they act kind of like guerrilla warfare people in order to kind of free everything. But they're trying to stop spice production. But spice production is the only thing that lets people travel from planet to planet to planet to planet. So in order for this empire to function, they absolutely need spice. If that production goes away, so does travel.
Yes.
And everything else just falls away. You know, you can't maintain control over a system when you have no ability to interact with that system. And so if all of a sudden spice production completely stopped, that would put a stranglehold on the entirety of galactic culture and politics and food production and, you know, resource everything. And collaboration, the whole thing. It is devastating. And Paul Atreides knows this. He's very intelligent in that way. You know, he's definitely his father's son. His father was a duke, Duke of House Atreides, played by Oscar Isaacs. Just fabulous. Excellent job on that in part one. Spoiler alert, he's not in part two. I'll let you make of that what you want.
Yes. He's not in the part two, yes.
Yeah, just, what? What do you mean he's not in there? Oh, sweetie, please go watch part one.
Yes. So, Ms. Bernal, can you describe any significant alliances or betrayals that shape the narratives of Dune part two?
So we are after the events of Dune part one, in which something significant happens with House Atreides, and they no longer have control over Arrakis, over the planet of Dune. But what they do have is a very tenuous relationship with the Fremen. So Paul Atreides and his mother, the Lady Jessica, they have been not captured, but kind of, you know, by the Fremen and by Stilgar, who is kind of the leader of this one group of Fremen. And they have to play their cards very carefully in order to stay alive, because they know that the Fremen are very no-nonsense people. And if the Fremen decide that you're useless, they're just going to let you die. Like, they're not going to keep you alive. You're not worth the water, is what they say, because water is such a scarce thing. They're not worth the water. And so Jessica and Paul end up having to find, you know, both of them have to find ways in order to ingratiate themselves with the Fremen, make themselves useful. So through Paul, that's by being a warrior, and he becomes a soldier, and he tells them, well, you know, I understand House Harkonnen. I know their battle tactics. I've been raised on tactical information since I was a child. Let me help you defeat them. And let me fight beside you. And they're like, oh yeah, like you could fight. And then he's like, oh, actually you can fight. Okay, give him, you know, let's do this. Mm-hmm. With Lady Jessica, she ends up using her knowledge as a Bene Gesserit to kind of come into the spiritual life of the Fremen, who have had contact with other Bene Gesserits for thousands of years. And so their kind of homegrown religion has been morphed and modified a little bit with different Bene Gesserit ideas of spirituality and ideas of kind of prophecy. And so her, knowing the prophecies, she tries to kind of make the Fremens believe that Paul is their Messiah. He is the Kwisatz Haderach. He is, you know, he is the Messiah they've been waiting for. He is the one who came from outside the stars to save them and bring water back to Arrakis. And so she's pregnant, you know, via, you know, Paul's father, you know, before he spoilers part one. And so she's trying to hide that for a while, but then also make this connection. And so what she ends up doing is she accepts becoming a sort of high priestess figure for the Fremen, because their high priestess is old and passing away. She's dying and needs to pass on this power. And they figure that Lady Jessica, who has been, they know, was trained as a Bene Gesserit, is the only woman that they have around that could take on this role. And so she does this wonderful magical thing, which is not exactly, you know, rated for use in pregnancy, and things happen which will affect the rest of the books and I'm sure the rest of the movies, but it secures enough of an alliance that she is then able to use the Fremen's faith to secure her and her children's own safety.
Interesting, Ms. Burnell. You will watch Dune Part 2 if you did not watch yet. But before we go on, Ms. Burnell, I want to shout out my ranking tops in the last 30 days, because in Zimbabwe, Movie 101 Review is number one on the Apple chart, Gambia number 3, Mexico number 5, Slovenia number 7, Sirloin at 10, United Kingdom at 66, Korea, Republic of Korea at 123, France, South Africa, Hong Kong, and a lot more. Thank you so much for supporting this podcast, because this podcast is created to empower movies itself. You know, Ms. Burnell, Movie 101 Review is my least podcast that I hate doing it, but I'm so shocked that I'm number one on Apple Parts in Zimbabwe.
Yay.
Thank you so much.
And the Gambia. Hello, Gambia. Everybody in the Gambia. I hope you're having a good day.
Yes.
Yeah.
I hope you have a good day. So, Ms. Burnell, what are the key antagonists I've introduced in Dune 2, and what motivates their conflict with the Atreides?
So there is a historical conflict between House Atreides and House Harkonnen. And House Harkonnen, it's led by Stellan Skarsgård's Baron Harkonnen. He does an incredible job. Oh my goodness. You know, Stellan Skarsgård, you're like, okay, you know it's going to be good. But you see him in the makeup and everything, the prosthetics for Baron Harkonnen, because Baron Harkonnen is quite a large figure.
Mm-hmm.
It's just incredible. You know, he does such a good job of his villainy. But House Harkonnen has a very iron fist. They're very no-nonsense. Death is quite close to them, I would say. They are quite vicious. They are quite deadly. And they hold Arrakis again in order to subjugate it. And so we get to see, you know, we get to see Dave Bautista as the first big kind of villain that they need to overcome, who plays Beast Raban, just this incredible, screaming, vicious, monstrous figure who goes out there trying to kill and defeat everything, including his own people, if he feels like it, all the time. And then you have spoilers. We have the entry of Austin Butler with Fade Rautha. And Fade Rautha is Beast Raban's brother. And so they are both nephews of Baron Harkonnen. And Fade Rautha is just this, he's the epitome of House Harkonnen. He is, you know, the bloodline has been secured so many times. He is exactly what the Bene Gesserit wanted. He is the ultimate just sort of warrior, killer, vicious, kind of deranged, but very intelligent in his derangement, you know, kind of figure. There's, you know, hints of certain incredibly dark things like cannibalism and things like that, with him and his lovelies, you know, his kind of his consorts off the side and things. But he's just this almost alien figure of what House Harkonnen views as perfection. And he comes in very cold. They're very good at how they bring him in too, because it's his birthday. And these are minor spoilers, but you know, have with me. I have to say something, you know, and you see Baron Harkonnen basically kind of like give him a birthday present. And his birthday present is fighting somebody in the Colosseum on the main planet of House Harkonnen. And instead of that person that he's fighting being drugged up and kind of dopey and incapable of really defending himself, Baron Harkonnen throws the guy out there as a proper challenge. La 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 la. All of a sudden, Fade Rotha remains in the movie. The other actor does not. Make of that what you will. Fade Rotha ends up going to Arrakis to basically do what his brother could not and bring the planet under heel and destroy the Fremen. Like, completely liquidate the planet of its naturalized peoples. Let me just put it that way. And so Fade Rotha is intelligent in his danger. He's a foe that is, I would say, brought in more as an equal to Paul Atreides, who up until this point has been seen as this incredible kind of wunderkind, you know, this genius kind of going around. And he's, you know, Paul Atreides is getting visions, he's seeing things in his dreams, and of course he's contaminated with the spice because the spice is everywhere in Arrakis, and so he's kind of getting this spiritual experience to coincide, but he can't really see it clearly until events occur in the book and thus the movie. And so we find out too, there is a twist that happens, and that twist, you know, if you've read the books, then you know what twist it is, and it's a fairly significant one. But they handle it so delicately and so wonderfully in the movie. I think one of the things I really liked about Dune Part 2 is they use tension very well. And what I mean by that is they use levels of tension. The movie doesn't, you know, it's not one prolonged shrill note coming from a violin with bad strings. Mm-hmm. That's kind of the tension you get in some things. It's like, yeah, no. They have that rise and fall of tension. And you need that. You need those breaks in order to come back into a tense moment and feel it again, because people kind of deaden otherwise. They sort of just kind of like, oh, okay, you know, or they laugh at it. Yes. You know, people will either turn apathetic or they'll turn to comedy and laugh at it in order to kind of release that tension that has yet to be released. That's just a natural protective mechanism that we have. And so when you're doing a film like this with, you know, death on the line and planetary politics and murderous killers and depraved peoples, and you've got also the kind of knife edge of religious fanaticism and, you know, a falling away from religion from a next generation with the Fremen, because the Fremen too are kind of separated in various ways, because there are the Fremen who are incredibly religious and who are waiting for this Messiah. And, you know, they're looking at Paul Atreides more and more and more. You know, the character of Stilgar believes that Paul Atreides is the Messiah. And he's like, okay, he's full bore into this. Let's go. Meanwhile, the other Fremen, the younger Fremen, are like, Messiah, that's just, you know, that's just something that was given to us by our overlords. There's no such thing. Religion is a joke, you know, that kind of thing. So you got the tension there too. And they play with this tension between fate and religion and control over thousands of years and anarchy so well. Meanwhile, the whole thing is just shot beautifully. They let shots be as fast or slow as they need to be. There are moments where it's just go, 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 go. And then there are moments where, you know, you've got House Harkonnen soldiers firing their jetpacks and arcing through the sky into a new place. And even though it's in the middle of this big battle and you're feeling all this, you know, there's firepower going off, there's explosions and things. And then all of a sudden you see these guys arcing through the sky in this beautiful arc, you know, with the incredible orange of the sands and the sort of light green blue of the sky. And then they land and you're like, whew. And then all of a sudden it picks back up again. And you're like, oh my gosh, it's so good. It's just such a well done, artfully done movie. And, you know, you get action movies that are very quick and raw. You know, you think of things like John Wick. I love John Wick. Mm-hmm. Those movies are fantastic. I love every single one of them. I've watched them all. They're great. And when I want action like that, I watch John Wick, because it's so well done there in that sort of fast chop, fast, chop, go, 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 these kind of staged fights. The fights in Dune are more calculated and yet desperate for the Fremen. And I love it. I think they did such a good job between the art, between the cinematography, and between the direction. It is a movie that is going to live in people's minds for 100 years.
Yes. I hope they're going to win the Oscars this year.
That's the hope.
Crossing my fingers. So in what ways does the technology, especially regarding space travel and warfare, evolve in Dune Part 2?
So one of the biggest things that happens, one, Paul is learning the kind of technology that the Fremens have. And so there's that kind of thing. But Gurney Halleck, who was Paul Atreides' kind of sword master, you know, he's somebody that taught, you know, he's a protector of the family who also taught Paul how to sword fight. He ends up reappearing. Not a spoiler, Josh Brolin is literally in the credits. Okay, there. So he's back, you know. Josh Brolin was cast, and he's there. Gurney Halleck brings with him something that was thought previously lost. And that something is something that should kind of shock and cling to every single person. And it does in the movie. You know, it's something that Paul Atreides is like, oh, you know, and the Fremen are like, okay, what is this? But spoiler, you know, spoiler for the next 10 seconds, you know, it's House Atreides' atomic weaponry. It's 100 incredibly powerful nukes. It's like 92 of them, but you know, it's astounding. And so all of a sudden you have this payload, which Paul now has the only genetic signature to have access to. Because in order to get into the vault where all of those weapons are, it requires, you know, biometrics, but it also requires kind of like genetic, you know, lock. And so he all of a sudden is in control of an entire planetary system, this entire multi-planetary house system's nuclear armament. And he's trying to show the Fremen why this is potentially a good idea, why this is a game changer, how they could use their armament to win the planet back. And with that comes a lot of tension, you know. It also comes a lot of tension because you can tell that it's like, we all know this isn't safe. This isn't, you know, this isn't the best option, but it's the option of desperate people. It's the option of desperate people who know that House Harkonnen is coming farther and faster. It is not going to let up. Now, Fade Rotha has taken over from Raban, and, you know, they decimated one of the Fremen strongholds in such a visceral way, the Fremen know their backs are against the wall. And this is the key to sort of, you know, to controlling what's going to happen next. And so it becomes quite a significant game changer in the film, as it should, you know. And when you think of when Dune was written, in the last century, you know, Dune was a book written by Frank Herbert. It was originally a serialization in Analog. So the science fiction magazine Analog. It was released in 1965. So we were in the middle of the Cold War. And you've got this book written by Herbert where these basically fictionalized space Bedouins are taking back their desert. And then you all of a sudden have, boom, nuclear warfare and the potential for nuclear warfare. And this was one of the things that Dune did quite well, both in the books and, you know, kind of going further on. It's both that sort of religious fervor and what happens when religion can go too far. Or what yes. happens when people kind of bond into religion, but also the fervor of how far that could take you when there's real cost. You know, there's real cost. You know, so again, Villeneuve plays it very well. And that's one of the choices that I did like. You know, I did like the choices that he made for the most part. There were a couple of choices that I was like, but really, though, you know, like, you know, but of course, you know, the choices that I doubted the most were the ones between Chani and Paul. So Paul Muad'Dib, you know, yes. He gets the name Muad'Dib.
So do you think, Ms. Bernal, there will be a part three for Dune?
Oh, yes. Oh, yes, I do. I think that this is the kind of epic, this is the kind of quality that people, you know, have already proved that they want to see. I think, you know, you can't watch a movie like this every day, you know, unless you're a certain kind of film fan. You know, yes. A movie like this is something of an occasion. It's something of a special kind of thing. And I think it reminds me of how much the theater used to be a kind of occasion. You know, and we're almost getting back to that a little bit. You know, people don't necessarily have the finances anymore to be able to go to the movies every few days or to be able to, you know, kind of go out. And now, you know, it used to be, I remember even 20 years ago, you know, you could go out, you know, on a date or go out with a friend, you know, buy a couple of tickets and some popcorn. And between the two of you, you might have spent 30, you know, maybe 40 bucks. Less than that, if you were going to a smaller theater like the Hollywood Three Theaters, it might cost you 20, you know, maybe 25. And now if you want to go out, see a movie, go get some popcorn, maybe a drink, you know, all of that, you're spending way more money.
Yes.
And people just don't really have it right now. And then when it comes down to it, we've been so saturated with all of this sort of glittery laser light neon sign sci-fi, which I love.
Yes.
I love, you know, and you know, the superhero movies and all this kind of thing. You get the Marvel movies, you've got the DC movies, you know. I am the kind of person who is like, Zack Snyder's Justice League was awesome. Like, I'll say it. Awesome, I'm a big geek like that. You know, I really quite liked Zack Snyder's version of it. But I am a fan of Zack Snyder's movies. Generally speaking. 300 was amazing. I loved
True.
It.
Something else.
You know, it was very, very special for what it was. But we get so saturated with certain types of sci-fi and certain types of movies that all of a sudden they start losing the veneer of being special. They start losing the veneer of being an event because we've seen it. We've seen it before. Or they're changing certain things up and you're like, I don't know. What are they doing? You know, sorts of things like that. But this, they did change some things up, you know, but it was such a special film to go see, you know, in the wide screen, in this incredible cocoon of sound and screen. And other movies that have come out, I don't think necessarily, like, you could watch them at home. And I think this is something that I talk about quite a bit too with Emily Armstrong, who is the creator and producer of Culinary Punk and Beckettville and Elder Space. She's been a producer for many years. And it used to be that your home theater was not as good as the theater, not as good as the cinema. But it's equalized quite a bit now. Especially, you know, after the last few years, after the dust up of the last few years, people were like, well, if I'm stuck at home for a while, then maybe I can, you know, kick in and get a cool sound system. Maybe I can get that incredibly large TV, you know, yeah, let's get some comfy chairs, you know, and they've built their own sort of film nests in their homes. And so there's tons of movies which just look great on TV yes. screens. Down, you get 70-inch TV screens that take up an entire wall. They look fantastic. You get a good sound system. They sound fantastic. There's no reason to leave your house. And that's totally fine because the experience is not lessened because it was on a 70-inch screen. The experience is the same. Definitely. Dune is not that film. it's something to see in the theater. Not to say you can't enjoy it on your 70-inch screen. I think it'll look fantastic there too. But it's such an event. And it's such an expansive thing that seeing it in that sort of communal area, in that cocoon, is just, oh.
Yes. It's something else to celebrate. Congratulations, Dune Part 2, for being box office hits. So, Ms. Bernal, can you please invite our listeners to support Dune Part 2 and, of course, your books?
Hello, everybody. I hope you go see Dune Part 2. It's definitely one of the science fiction movies, I think, that you should absolutely see. If you've liked Part 1, you'll like Part 2. If you've liked movies like Blade Runner 2049, Lord of the Rings, especially the extended editions of the trilogy, then I believe you will like this one. It is just an incredible visual event, and I hope you support the film. And congratulations to all of the actors and to all of the crew, especially Denis Villeneuve and Greg Fraser for just doing such an incredible job on Dune 2. I cannot wait for Part 3. I want to know what's going to happen with Johnny. You know, I need Zendaya to be like good. Okay, please. If you want to see more about myself, if you want to read my articles on Substack or on all of the other things I do, including the podcast We Aren't Dead Yet, which goes live every Thursday, you can find more information at saphabernell.com. That is SAPHABURNELL.com. And you can find both my books, links to the podcasts I've done with Book 101, with Mr. Lucas, and also links to everything else that I do. And I'd really appreciate if you gave it a look. And if you like what I've said, please give my books a read. I'd really appreciate that too.
Definitely. Most especially Neon Leben, one of your bestsellers.
Yes, it's my cyberpunk book, I think.
Yes, people, let's support Miss Safa Bernal, because if you support her, more reviews to come, more books to come, and let's empower writers and movies all over the world. So, Miss Bernal, thank you for your time.
And thank you.
More to come, people. See you soon.